I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guest for the day. It is Trader Nick in the United States. Nick, good afternoon from London. Good morning to you.
Hey, Johnny. It's nice to be back with you.
Great to speak to you again. Let's get the latest from the markets from you as we stand today. And I suppose the standout so far is how strong the dollar is at the moment.
That's right. The dollar is stronger today, about a 0.25% higher, and that is off of the back of the U.S. PCE number, which is, of course, personal consumption expenditure and is a preferred measurement of inflation by the Fed's own accord. Now, what's interesting here today is that this number came in at 3.7% on a year-over-year basis. The forecast was just 3.6%. And if I'm reading this correctly, 3.3% on the core PCE number is the highest that we've been in a couple years. So you've had inflation on the rise here. We've known that. We've discussed that over and over on the podcast. And it's kind of taking the economics community by storm is this idea that inflation is not going away. What is the Fed going to do about it? And there's a whole lot of drama on that side of things because there's an argument to be made that the Fed will actually end up doing nothing about it and will continue to wait on the sidelines. Now, what's interesting about that is to the credit of kind of the expectations of the doves out there, the idea is more so that some softer economic reads, like for example, retail sales, consumer confidence, PMIs, GDP growth, the jobs market numbers, which we know the non-farm payroll numbers, these things have been softer than expected recently. So to counteract the rise in inflation, you now have this dual mandate kind of in the balance, right? We're wondering, should we be focused more on keeping the economy and the jobs market chugging along, or should we focus a little bit more on this persistent rise in inflation? And simultaneously, how much of this rise of inflation is due to what's going on in the Middle East? And actually, to answer that question, one of the more concerning aspects of this is that some of the core measurements going higher, which of course exclude food and that notable energy component, have also been kind of a sign of stickier inflation beyond just oil prices. And so you have this inflation that is persistent. And at what point does the Fed kind of spill over and say, we've got to deal with the inflation rise, we've got to put a stop to that and not make the same mistake that we made a few years back, which was it's inflation that is transitory, it's not going to last very long. If you wait too long, we saw what happened between 2022 and 2023. We saw the fastest rate hike cycle in history, going from near zero interest rates all the way up to 5%+ on the Fed overnight rate. So a dramatic rise in interest rates was kind of necessary to get inflation back down. But here's the trick to it all is that inflation has not actually sustainably returned to the 2% target. So the Fed is still dealing with higher inflation, and not only higher inflation than their 2% target, but rising inflation. So the question becomes, what does the Fed do? Do they continue to hold off on rate hikes, or do they take the plunge and go ahead and hike the interest rates to try and get inflation under control? Expectations in terms of the Fed watch tool, I'll pull it up here as we speak, have been modestly thinking that a Fed rate hike is not probable here, at least not in September or October, but then that there is kind of an up for debate possibility of rate hikes going into the December and January of next year meeting. Seems like consensus is thinking in the next 5 to 6 months, you may see a rate hike. But one thing that I think is kind of interesting, the debate, the hot topic here is that if things were going the other way, if there was the possibility to make an argument for rate cuts, would the Federal Reserve do it? And a lot of people would argue, yes, they would. They would find any narrative necessary, if possible, to lower interest rates, but will adamantly resist the need to hike interest rates for fear of what it could do to the economic engine, the jobs market, et cetera. we're caught between a rock and a hard place with all this stuff, because you have a situation where we want growth to sustain, we want growth to be resilient and strong and all of the things, but simultaneously, this inflation problem, if it continues to rear its ugly head once more, inflation persistently rising, is very problematic for a couple things. Now, since we've last spoken, there has been also a lot of drama in the Treasury world. We've had Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent kind of pledging this resilience to keep the bond market intact, to keep things under control, to keep a lid on long duration government bond yields, the 30-year notably in mind here, the 10-year and the 30-year. Keeping those at bay is a mission critical thing for the administration and for the Treasury, mostly because, well, effectively, it is a limiter to growth if the yields continue to blow out, as they say. If they continue to move much higher, it is a structurally inhibiting thing to economic growth. It is a inhibiting thing to profit margins for major corporations. And we know centered at all of this is the AI trade as a growth engine. And it seems like, you know, not just the US, but governments globally are kind of going all in on this thesis that is the AI trade must work. Data center build outs and hoping for, you know, substantial revenue on the other side definitely creates kind of an all in effect where all of this money and investment is pouring in. We see Magnificent Seven companies, the hyperscalers that are, of course, doing a lot of the spending of money to build these data centers and AI infrastructure. We see that spending expanding dramatically, and it sort of is also putting pressure on the bond market. I'll explain that briefly. Basically, the idea is that now foreign investors can look at where they want to effectively lend money, and they could lend to the U.S. government as kind of a degrading kind of offer. There seems to be a less and less appeal to lending to the U.S. government and more appeal to lending actually to these AI superstars, the spenders, the hyperscalers who are going into the debt market more and more in order to fund their ventures in the AI world. Now, the reason that's interesting is because these are companies that make boatloads of money. And yes, they have dipped into their free cash flow and now have dipped into the bond market. But many people are thinking, hey, that's an attractive place to lend money where you feel reasonably confident you're going to get paid back, as opposed to the US government, which just crossed $40 trillion in debt. So you have a very intriguing story. And I also thought about something that was kind of interesting about this whole global bond yield stuff. In the past, we have seen regimes where, you know, Greece, for example, has had a lot of problems and their bond market has kind of imploded. The UK has also experienced times like that where the bond market kind of freaks out. But right now, we're in an interesting time because it's like all of the G7 nations simultaneously see their bond yields, interest rates, borrowing costs going up and up and up. And so it's a very intriguing time. It's very interesting in that regard to see global bond yields continuing to rise higher and higher.
And Nick, we're going to hear from Fed Chief Kevin Warsh tomorrow. Of course, he's only just taken the job as head of the central bank. What are we expecting?
It'll be interesting to get any sort of guidance that we can out of Kevin Warsh. I say that tentatively because Kevin Warsh has been adamantly against giving forward guidance. And notoriously, during the Jackson Hole Symposium, that is, historically speaking, where a lot of Fed officials have taken the stand as an opportunity to give more guidance. I'm very curious to hear if we get any of that. But it is possible that Kevin Warsh could kind of take the backseat once again. It seems like his narrative, his strategy has been so far to speak hawkishly, not do actually as much of, you know, kind of a hawkish expectation might suggest, not raise interest rates so far, despite, you know, people claiming that he should have already. It's kind of interesting. Obviously, it's a committee, so it's not his sole decision as to whether or not to hike interest rates or not. But advocating that basically they are going to continue to sort of monitor the situation, that 2% is still their target. I imagine we'll hear more of that. But in regards to actually laying out a plan or seeing it guidance in regards to saying, hey, I think a rate hike could be appropriate, I don't know that that's very likely. So far, it has been take the back seat, and his claim that the market will kind of sort itself out is actually interestingly not necessarily having maybe the effects that they had wanted. Yields have been rising since the last Fed meeting, and maybe in part because of the lack of forward guidance. This criticism of forward guidance by Kevin Warsh, simultaneously, we now see the other side of that, which is with no forward guidance, the market might actually be more jittery and uncertain of what you might do next. And so that is also causing some potential uncertainty in the bond market. So very curious to see if that tone changes at all, or if he continues to hold cards very close to his chest.
Excellent stuff, Nick. We'll speak to you again on Friday. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Johnny. You too.